Right, I'm an addict and it's better.
Hey,
It's
Petter.
better. That's, or as I should would say in Sweden, en beroende, det heter Petter. That's Swedish for you. Well, I want to start off by thanking the home group, making this kind suggestion to invite me to your home group to share. I think I know the most of you I see in the picture here. I met you in person, which is very cool. So that's very nice. I see friendly faces. So this is going to work out fine, I guess. So we'll see what happens. As I said, I haven't anything planned. I talked to my sponsor beforehand about this, which if he had some words of wisdom or something to give me, but just share your experience with recovery. Don't stay too long on the backstory, the background, which I've heard my sponsor share about, not, take up too much time in active addiction. We all know how to use, but I still want to share some of my story, what led up to being surrendered to NA, and then what happened from there. All right. Okay, addiction. Yeah, it's a violent force. It's a real violent energy. It's a dark thing, addiction. I think most of us know that, how it feels to be desperate and alone and very hopeless. I've witnessed that in my dad. I grew up with addiction in my house. I saw it on close hand near, Really, it wasn't a very romantic picture of what would happen if you use, no matter what you use, no matter if it's in liquid form or any other form. I've seen what addiction does to a person whom I love, how that could change a person to do horrible things to those closest to him. So I grew up with that, seeing the destruction of addiction and what it does to a family. So I started pretty early. I'm one of those people who can testify that I think I had addiction long before I used any chemical. The only thing that was missing, the missing part was the actual chemical. I was looking in other places before I used, trying to change my perception of reality before I changed any drug, tried any drugs, which I did. Growing up like I did, had a change that perception of reality because it wasn't a very nice place to be. So I started to having, real fantasized worlds, like parallel realities, about fantasizing about being sort of a detective. I was very into detectives as a small kid, 6 or 7 years old. I had my own detective private eye firm, which I didn't really, but in my own head. So I was out investigating crime as a 7 year old in my neighborhood. And created all these characters in this dreamlike world, which I could, escape to when my own reality was too painful. I couldn't see it at the time, but I can see it when working the steps, looking at my past and the patterns that I started to change reality long before I used anything. So that was my, and I also, I got screwed up in sex long before I really was with a woman, as an early age. I was pretty screwed up in that as well. I think I had, that was also in the steps I learned about being molested, That was also one thing. I'm going to the hardcore stuff here, or out of the bat, it seems. But by another kid, actually, for a pretty long time, which created even more of a shameful situation. I lived a lot in shame, and which made me feel even more alone. I withdraw into myself, you know, and hating on myself, and, you know, tried to be part of sports. I was a pretty athletic kid. I was in football. I was playing different sports, but I didn't never really fit in. I liked the actual sport. I was pretty good at it, but I couldn't fit in the team. Always felt like an outsider. Felt like I was different than the other ones. And coming with my, you know, story, what's going on at home and with this sexual thing, I always felt like I was, you know, a weirdo, someone, if they only knew what I'm coming from and what I've done and what's been done to me, they would never accept me, you know, and because I didn't accept myself. So I had a hard time fitting in these different arenas. And hanging out with other kids who was sort of misfits. We hadn't started using drugs yet, but we were starting, you know, fighting a lot and, you know, destroying stuff at our, you know, street, and became pretty violent, actually. But at the age of 12, I tried my first drug. 11 or 12 was alcohol, you know, which is usually is, and there I found it. The ticket out of here, the missing piece. Seen what that actual drug had done to my dad and my family, you know, the horrible part of it, but I didn't know that it could feel like this. So the feeling itself that it produced was way more, you know, that's what I needed. I felt at the time. It was like a religious experience almost. It was like, what the, can you feel like this? Is this even possible? I remember, most of us probably remember the first time we used something that changed everything. That even though I puked my guts out, my second thought was, my thought was still, when can we do this the next time? When it's happening again, you know? That was all I needed to know. When are we going to do this again? And on from there, you know, that's what makes me sure about that I was an addict long before I used anything, because that was a really abnormal reaction to the drug itself. And it just kept going like that. Everything I ever tried was a little bit better, and I just felt like I was in heaven. I early on got in trouble with the law, school, with other kids, but I still felt like an outsider, even with others, people using. I remember still felt like I was separated from that crowd as well. I was looking at them as you know, the thing about self-centeredness, about us making ourselves better than or less than, never equal. Why we have the name anonymous, anonymity is so important to put an equal, to make us equals, really. Because I always felt like different and a little better than others, actually, which I also found in the steps. I was looking at the kids I was using with and thought, yeah, I understand what the fuck you use, because you're a wreck. You know, I wasn't very nice in the head, but I wouldn't tell them because I was too scared to do that. So the drugs has a real impact at first about finding something that I thought the solution to my anxiety, my fear, my everything, courage. I could be someone, I could start telling people off, I could, you know, And of course, as we know, it turned on me pretty quickly. And as I said, I didn't. Pretty quickly, I went to once too many, thousands never enough. The thousands never enough was my kind of deal. The next one, that was my drug of choice. The next one, I always wanted more. That was my drug of choice, more. Whatever it was, I wanted more, as fast as possible. You know, and that created a lot of problems, of course. And so it went pretty fast, but I still finished school, did all the things, but still was using. And I don't know how much I need to go into what I, you know, it went at the age of 19, I was dying. And with that was a period of seven years from using the first time. I was dying from another drug. I was ready to do anything to get the next fix, anything. So that this about the ways and means to get more, doing anything to get the next one, I was willing to do that, which also created a lot of harm, both myself and others. So then I come in contact with my first treatment. You know, we all, maybe not everyone, but you know, a few of us end up in treatment. I ended up in 13 different treatment centers, which they didn't work, you know, of course. I wasn't there. I have, they have tried to, you know, I got drugs from the government, replacement drugs, you know, everything. I got all these different medications for all these different diagnoses I got from psychiatrists. You know, I've tried looking for the solution, still looking in chemicals, the quick fix, the next one for a long time, over 20 years. And it really took me to those places that we read about at every meeting, but our James institutions and death, near death, been brought back to life a couple of times. So it was very evident for me that my life had become unmanageable. I was at the point of when the surrender happened. I was at the point that I wanted to die, you know, but I still had something in me that wanted to live. And that's all it needed, I guess, because if you fast forward now to what actually happened for almost 7 years ago, I celebrated 7 years next Sunday, which is very cool. That's unreal. But so beautiful, the miracle. But what happened there for almost 7 years ago then is I had tried everything. I had been in and out of NA before, you know, going through rehab, been introduced to what I thought was NA. I hadn't surrendered yet. You know, I've been sharing meetings with, you know, drugs on me. I didn't feel like they were drugs, but they were, you know. And I wasn't ready to surrender to the part of total abstinence, really. I wasn't ready for that up until 7 years ago. That was the only thing that was so evident, to get clean. Bottom, full stop. You need to get clean to get clean. There's no other way to go. It was as clear, I thought, at that, as convinced of that as I was convinced before that I needed a drug to live. You know, if you make sense of that. I knew that the drugs needs to go if I need to have a chance to life, to recovery. And when that happened, it was like a, I hit me hard. I knew what to do then. It was a total surrender from day one then. I can't really explain it, but I had a profound awakening 7 years ago. From the start, I heard people talk about, you know, getting struck clean, like a bomb, like it felt like. And I had always had an issue with spirituality, that part of the program. I always questioned that. I looked at myself as an atheist, and you know, I grew up in a very political home. You never talked about religion or anything close to anything spiritual. It was more like, and that thing got also as evident as total abstinence, that this is a spiritual way of life. And it is no question that it is a spiritual power involved. No question, no doubt at all. And then you would think like, well, then there you have it. You know about the spiritual power, and you know about total abstinence. Then you're all good. Then you don't need to attend meetings. Then you don't need to. You got it all then, right? But I knew that this was the way to keep recovering. And the thing was, I was still sort of very delusional about who am I, or the program. I didn't have. So I got a sponsor real quick. Then and there, I've changed sponsor, I think, 3 times since I got clean for different reasons. The sponsor I currently have, I've been having for, I think, 5 years now. This might go all over the place. Hopefully you follow along. I just share it as it comes. But the recovery journey, so to speak, when I got sort of what happened was, when I had about 3 months clean, we started to look. I got introduced by the sponsor at that time about a blue book. Have you seen this book? It's an NA book. It's blue. What the fuck is this? I got introduced to that book from my former sponsor. Said, well, we should take a look at this and maybe translate it. I had about 9 months clean when that started happening. So we were a few guys in the current home group at that time that started looking at that literature and started really digging in deep into this translation thing and reading the basic text. I hadn't read the whole book ever before. I've held it many times, but I never read it. And now we really read it line by line. You know, who's been involved in translation service, that this is a great way to start discussing the program and learning about the literature. And, you know, so I got deeply involved in that when I had about 9 months clean, or maybe it was, something like that. And also introduced to having a daily program, calling a sponsor daily, using the 5 tools of recovery, that it is a daily program. I've read it for many times before. I've been in and out in an A. We read it at every meeting, at all meetings, about the just for today. Something about having a daily program. Never got that anyway, because it's all the things that got so clear that I needed to do has always been right in front of me, but I wasn't ready to see it. I wasn't ready to embrace it. I wasn't there yet. But now I was open for it. And we started a home group out of that, because it got became some controversy of us translating this book with other members. So we started another home group, which is my current home group for now, for about 6 years. We celebrated 6 years this year, as a home group, the Äntligen Fria group. I'm currently sitting in the facility where we started our first meeting, which is also cool. These are the steps and traditions behind me here in Swedish. So, yeah, just some. Yeah, that's the story about the home group. And, you know, there's only a few of us who started the home group. Former sponsor left, member died, three other members left. So now it's a new group, new members, but it's still the same group. You know, we're keeping it alive, doing, try to carry the message, and further our primary purpose still, you know. So, but looking at the steps, what got very, as probably most of you know, we end up riding in a step for quite some time. Yeah. Can happen. I rode in the first step for quite some time, and I'm very grateful for it now that I did that, because I learned that the, you know, the surrender part, the principle of surrender, is so much deeper than I ever imagined. It got so many dimensions in surrender, and it really goes through the whole, all of the steps. It's really the foundation of all the steps, the surrender part. It just deepens along with the program. And so now I kept working the steps with the current sponsor, wrote on. Now I'm currently riding on step 8, actually. I'm making a list of all the people I have harmed. I would have thought that, well, you've done this for quite some time now, you've written about a lot of the things you went through, and that I would be sort of, wouldn't be as affected by it as I am. But writing about these situations, about these people, and how much I harm myself and others, really affected me deeply this time. And I think I was more ready for it also this time. Because one thing I learned also in the steps is to be fearless and thorough from the start, not just in the fourth step, but do a fearless and thorough first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and so on. Being fearless and thorough. You know, because my life has changed on so many levels since this started, you know, since I got surrendered. You know, I can't even start explain, really. It's everything has changed. It's not just from looking from the outside. You would see that I have a job, I have a, you know, I have a degree, you know, I have a family, I have a driving license, I have all these things I never imagined I had as a productive member of society, let's say. But that's not the most precious gift. Most precious gift is being free from the insanity of addiction, being free from compulsion and obsessive. I still can get obsessive about things, you know, I'm still an addict, but I'm not in desperation. I'm not in hopelessness. I'm not waking up in anxiety every morning. I'm actually waking up in prayer. That's, you know, I have my spiritual routines are really the foundation of my life today, and being ready to give back freely what was given to me is a gift, not an effort. It's not even an effort. You know, it's a responsibility, not even a question if you should give back what has been given to you. And that's also one thing, you know, about going through the steps and learning that it's less and less about me and more about the service, more about this God as we understand God, and to be of service, even riding the steps is for the still suffering addict. Because if I recover, I got more to give to the still suffering addict. I got more to give back to those still suffering. So even the step work isn't about me. It's about giving back. It's about becoming a recovering addict to be an example of our program for others to follow. It's not even, you know what I mean? Step work is about giving back. It's not about me. So I've become very emotional and grateful for NA and for what's given me. I got my son here this weekend. He's in there. I live actually in the same house where we have our first, this facility. It's not at my place though. It is in a church. I live, yeah, in the same church. But I have him here now, and he turned 16. He was 9 when I got clean. And he's seen, he got to experience dad clean, present. I was talking about my dad when I started to share. We started to have a relationship. He died from addiction. He never got any recovery, but I got a relationship with him the last year he was alive. I decided to still, suggested by my sponsor, to be there and just be a son. You know, even though he didn't recover. And I'm happy for that, because in that time I had a chance to forgive him. I forgave him during that year we were in contact, because I was recovering. He was dying. I was recovering, but I had the chance to forgive him in my heart, you know, and that was also a blessing, a gift. I remember I was in a meeting when I got the news that he had died, you know, from addiction. So I was in the right place. I was right where I supposed to be. I was in a meeting. I could share about it. I had friends there. I had fellows, you know. Been through some, as I told you, we lost a member here a couple of years ago. It was one of the who started the group. He was also at the EFSC 2017, Christopher, who was one of the founding members of this home group. But every time that happens, gets me some more, just more energy to keep giving back, that we need to keep doing this. Addicts are truly dying. And that doesn't take much effort, really. But it takes effort to recover. It does. It does. No, I'm just very grateful to have a chat. I don't know. I'm just sharing from the heart. I don't know what's been said. We'll get to know you guys. You know, to have met you, to have hugged you, to have laughed together, and everything we do for the common good. You know, for the still suffering addicts. It's just beautiful to get to know people from all places who comes from suffering, who are ready to go the extra mile for those suffering. It's a beautiful thing, and I'm proud to be part of that, and I don't take it for granted. Yeah, I'm just very grateful and emotional, actually. I was sort of surprised myself but it's beautiful, this thing we do. The NA, it's so beautiful. And but I think I stop there and just thank you all for being a part of my recovery, and I want to thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you.